dragged myself through my front door. The egg and fruit gunk had dried en route and was matted in my hair and plastered to my jeans and t-shirt. Diesel looked me up and down.
Another issue at the produce warehouse?
I don't want to talk about it. It involved a rat.
What's in your hair?
I felt around. I think it's mostly egg.
Do you need help? Do you want me to hose you off in the parking lot?
Geez Louise, I said. I had a really crummy morning, and I've got egg in my hair. Could I get a little sensitivity here? Diesel smiled.
I could take a shot at it.
He gathered me into his arms, held me close, and leaned his head against mine.
You smell nice, he said, like fruit salad.
An hour later, we were all in the Escalade. Carl had pitched a fit about being left alone, so we brought him along. He was in the back seat, strapped in by a seatbelt, his hands folded in his lap, looking as if at any moment he was going to ask if we were there yet.
Is it me, or is this whole monkey thing getting a little Twilight Zone?
Diesel asked, checking Carl out in the rearview mirror. You think it's just getting Twilight Zone? You don't think it's always been Twilight Zone?
Have you heard anything from his mother?
Nope, not a word.
It's like we've adopted a hairy little kid, Diesel said. There's something about him sitting in the back seat that's friggin' spooky.
I looked over my shoulder at Carl, and he sent me a finger wave. So if I wasn't along for the ride, would you just pop yourself over to Philadelphia? I asked Diesel.
No, it's not that easy to get popped someplace.
Wolf didn't seem to have a lot of trouble with it. Is he more powerful than you?
No, he's just different.
How so?
For starters, he kills people.
Diesel crossed the Delaware River into Pennsylvania. Do you know Wolf?
Yes.
Have you known him for a long time?
I've known him forever, Diesel said. He's my cousin.
That took my breath away. His cousin? He was hunting down a family member. This must be hard on you, I said to Diesel. I would hate to be in that position. And my mother would be in a state.
Someone has to disable Wolf, and I've been tapped. Even if it wasn't my job, I would probably feel compelled to stop him.
Has he always been bad?
He's always been different. Intense, melancholy, angry, obsessed with his power, and brilliant.
Diesel looked normal. He was the embodiment of the all-American charismatic oaf. But he was from a gene pool closely related to Wolf, and Wolf wasn't nearly normal. Wolf dominated his airspace and radiated unnatural energy. And God knows what else Wolf could do. So I had a few thoughts here about Diesel and his abilities that went beyond normal. Or heck, maybe I've just seen so much weird stuff since I became a bounty hunter that I'll believe anything. Carl was making sounds in the back seat.
Poo, poo, poo.
Diesel looked at him in the rearview mirror.
What's with the monkey?
I think he's amusing himself.
Poo, 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 poo,
Carl said. Diesel turned the radio on, and Carl made the sounds louder.
Poo, 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 poo!
Diesel shut the radio off and shot a black look at Carl.
If you keep making that sound, I'm gonna set you out at the side of the road and not come back for you.
Carl blew out a sigh and went silent. Feeling cranky? I asked Diesel.
Not until a couple minutes ago.
Chirrup,
Carl said.
Chirrup, chirrup, chirrup.
Do you have your gun with you? Diesel asked me.
Yeah, but there aren't any bullets in it.
Probably a good thing, Diesel said.
Chirrup, 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 chirrup,
Carl said. Diesel exited the highway and hooked a right. You aren't really going to leave him on the side of the road, are you? I asked him.
No, I saw a sign for Walmart. I'm making a pit stop.
He pulled into the lot and parked.
Stay here. I'll be right back.
Carl sat up straight and looked out the window. No, I said, we're not there yet. Pit stop. Carl looked confused. He didn't know pit stop. Just go with it, I told him. Diesel will be back in a couple minutes.
Chirrup!
10 minutes later, Diesel jogged back to the SUV. Carl had gone from chirrup to choo-choo-choo to boo-boo-boo-boo-boo, and I was on the verge of gonzo. Diesel angled behind the wheel, handed me a bag, and tossed a bag into the back seat.
Knock yourself out, Diesel said to Carl.
What's in his bag?
Food and an electronic game. I got them to sell me the demo that was already charged.
What's in my bag?
Food. Carl selected a bag of chips, and I did the same.
That was pretty smart, I said to Diesel.
Diesel stuck his hand into the chip bag and took a fistful.
I have a highly developed sense of self-preservation and a low tolerance for monkey business.
What do you expect to get from Scanlan's sister?
I don't know. You throw the net out and see what you pull in.
I hate intruding at a time like this. She just found out someone killed her brother.
She'll want that person brought to justice, and I'm sure you're good at talking to a grieving woman.
Me? What about you?
I suck at it.
You're kidding. You're going to make me do the interrogation?
Yeah, this is one of those girl skills.
That's so sexist.
And?
What do you want me to ask her?
I'm looking for real estate. I'm guessing Wolf and Munch are holed up somewhere in South Jersey within commuting distance to Trenton. I did property searches on Munch and Scanlan, and nothing turned up. I looked for Wolf using known aliases and holding companies, and got zero. I guess they could be under assumed names in the high roller suite at Caesars, but it would be impractical, especially if they're working with illegal technology. Munch was a complete loner with no Jersey ties that we know of. That leaves Scanlan. Ask about the missing sister.
There could also be a third person involved, someone we haven't discovered yet.
It's possible.
Carl was examining the handheld game. He shook it and smelled it. He bit it. He looked forward to me. I leaned over the seat and showed Carl how to turn the game on and push the buttons. A castle appeared on the screen. Blue sky, clouds, music, birds flying. A little man ran into the center of the screen. The little man was joined by a pretty girl in a pink gown. Lightning struck the castle. The castle exploded.
Eep!
Carl said. The man and the pink-gowned girl returned, and Carl hunkered in, eyes narrowed, concentrating. Diesel was back on the road, the big Escalade rolling south like a cruise ship under full power. Farms flew by the window, and in the back seat, Carl was barely breathing as his fingers twitched on the game buttons, and the happy sounds of Super Mario Brothers drifted up to us. Roberta Scanlan lived in a brick row house in a blue-collar section of North Philadelphia. According to Diesel's research, she had never married, and she worked out of her house doing website design and maintenance. We sat at the curb for a couple minutes watching the house, getting a sense of the neighborhood. It was quiet at this time of the day. No traffic, no kids playing outdoors, no dogs barking. Only Carl the monkey making Mario music in the back seat.
Okay, cutie pie, Diesel said to me. Go do your thing.
I blew out a sigh and heaved myself out of the SUV. I hated this part of my job. I hated prying into people's private lives and intruding on their grief. I understood that it was sometimes necessary, but that didn't make it any more palatable. I trudged up the sidewalk and rang the bell, thinking I wouldn't mind if Roberta wasn't home. No such luck. Roberta Scanlan opened the door and looked out at me.
Yes, Roberta said.
I apologized for the intrusion, introduced myself, and asked if I could speak with her.
I suppose, she said, but I've already spoken to the police. I just don't know what more I can tell you.
Did your brother own property in South Jersey?
Not that I know about, but he didn't tell me much. It's not like we were a close family. I couldn't even tell you when I talked to him last.
Roberta was in her 40s, but looked older. Her brown hair was shot with gray. Her face was lined and makeup-free. Her clothes were shapeless, designed for comfort and not for fashion.
I couldn't find any information on your sister Gail, I said to Roberta. I couldn't find an address.
Gail's a free spirit. She doesn't exactly have an address, although she obviously lives somewhere. Everyone lives somewhere, right? Even street people live somewhere.
How do you get in touch with her? Does she have a cell phone?
She has a post office box in Marbury. I sent her a letter about Eugene, but I haven't heard anything back.
When was the last time you saw her?
Years ago. She came for our father's funeral. She flitted in and flitted out. She said she had to get back to her animals. I don't know what kind of animals she was talking about. Gail always has some sort of cause. She left home after she graduated from high school so she could live in a tree and save a habitat for owls. After that, it was wood ducks, and I think at one time she had a collection of rabbits that she'd rescued from a cosmetics lab.
But she always gets her mail in Marbury?
So far as I know, I guess she could have it forwarded somewhere.
And what's her last name?
Scanlon. She never married. None of us ever married.
I left my card with Roberta and asked her to call if she heard from Gail.
Well, Diesel wanted to know when I buckled myself in next to him.
Not much. Her sister doesn't have an address, but she has a post office box in Marbury. And it sounds like she's made a career of saving owl habitats and rabbit eyelids.
That's it? That's all you got?
Yep.
Where's Marbury? He asked.
I got a map out of the side door pocket and found Marbury. It's on the way to Atlantic City, I said, give or take a bunch of miles.
Carl tapped me on the shoulder.
Eep!
What?
Eep!
I don't speak monkey, I told him. I don't know eep. He pointed to his crotch and crossed his legs. I think he has to go to the bathroom, I said to Diesel. Diesel powered a back window down.
Go do it,
he said to Carl. Carl looked out the window and looked up and down the street and shook his head. Diesel cut his eyes to Carl.
Dude, you're a monkey. You can do it anywhere.
Carl shrugged. I think he might have some species confusion, I said to Diesel. Diesel put the car into gear and drove back to the main street. He cruised two blocks, found a McDonald's, and parked. Carl jumped out the window and scampered to the door to McDonald's. He grabbed the handle with both hands, but he couldn't get the door to open.
I'll get it, I said to Diesel.
I could use a milkshake. Do you want anything?
Double cheeseburger, fries, Coke.
I opened the door for Carl, and he rushed off. I put my order in, paid the cashier, and was about to leave with my food when there was a muffled scream from the ladies' restroom. A door banged open, and a woman stormed out with Carl in tow.
Who owns this monkey? She asked. It was in the ladies' room looking under all the stall doors.
Carl pointed to me.
You need to teach your monkey some manners, the woman said.
I looked down at Carl. Are you done? I asked him. He shrugged, and we quickly walked back to the SUV. I sucked down my milkshake. Diesel ate his burger, and Carl ate his box of cookies.
Your monkey was looking under the stall doors in the ladies' room, I told Diesel.
That's my boy, Diesel said.
Chapter 10 It was almost 4 o'clock when we rolled into Marbury. Diesel nosed the SUV into a parking space in front of the post office and unbuckled his seatbelt.
My turn, he said. This shouldn't take long. It sounds like Gail Scanlon's had a post office box here for years. I'm hoping someone knows her.
I watched Diesel walk away, and I enjoyed the view. I had no intention of getting involved, but that didn't mean I was blind to the masterpiece in front of me. Diesel was a big, solid guy who moved with seemingly effortless efficiency. Everything about him was in perfect proportion, and from where I was sitting, his ass looked like Little Bear's bed. Not too hard and not too soft, but just right. Diesel disappeared into the building, and I turned to Carl.
So, I said, how's it going?
Carl looked at me, shrugged, and went back to his game. A pickup rumbled past us. An old man shuffled out of the post office and walked down the street. I went to my cell phone to call Morelli, but we were in the middle of the Jersey Pine Barrens, and there wasn't cell service. The Pine Barrens is a heavily forested area covering a little over 1 million acres of coastal plain across South Jersey. The soil is sandy, and the trees are pine mixed with oaks that have managed to survive the occasional fire. Hundreds of acres are uninhabited, unless you count blueberries and cranberries and the stubborn, hardscrabble folks known as pineys who live and work there. There are also hundreds of antique shops, bed and breakfasts of varying quality, and dirt roads that go nowhere. Plus, there's the Jersey Devil. The Pacific Northwest has Sasquatch, Loch Ness has Nessie, and the Pine Barrens has the Jersey Devil. Diesel left the post office, walked to the car, and slid in behind the wheel. Well, I asked.
Gail Scanlon comes in on no fixed schedule and gets her mail. Sometimes she's in once a week. Sometimes they don't see her for 6 months. Her box was emptied yesterday, but no one saw her come in. The post office boxes are around a corner from the counter.
Did you get her description?
Slim, average height, long black hair, early 40s, eccentric.
What does eccentric mean?
They didn't elaborate, but she must be really out there for them to call her eccentric. This isn't exactly the center of sane.
Did they know where she lived?
Nah. One of the guys said she was a citizen of the world, and the woman next to him said she was a nymphomaniac.
Sounds like your kind of woman.
Yeah, she has potential.
Now what? I asked.
Now we go home and regroup.
Diesel was regrouping on the couch watching Seinfeld reruns, and Carl was sitting beside him.
This is going too slow, I said to Diesel. You're supposed to be the big deal super bounty hunter. Why aren't you doing something?
I am doing something. I'm waiting.
Waiting isn't good. I hate waiting. Waiting feels like doing nothing.
I have Flash watching the Sky Social Club, and every 10 minutes I go to the window to see if the cloud of doom has rolled over Trenton, signifying Wolf's presence.
Nothing personal, but I don't care about Wolf. I need to find Martin Munch.
I know how Wolf works. Right now he's involved in a project that involves Munch, and they're joined at the hip. If we find one of them, we'll find both of them. If we don't find them until after Munch has served his purpose, we'll find Munch with his head screwed on backwards.
I cracked my knuckles and gnawed on my lower lip. I don't want to find Munch with his head screwed on backwards. I felt my cell phone buzz at my hip, and I checked the readout. Morelli.
I have a problem, Morelli said.
No kidding.
More than that. I just got home, and Anthony is missing, and there's a naked woman in my bed.
And?
I don't want to talk about this on the phone. Can you get over here? I need help.
I'm on my way. I disconnected and grabbed my bag. Gotta go, I said to Diesel. Morelli needs help with a naked woman.
I didn't know you were into that, Diesel said.
It's not a party, it's a problem. I'll be on my cell if you notice the cloud of doom hanging over my apartment building. 10 minutes later, I walked into the disaster area that used to be Morelli's living room. It was littered with empty beer cans, fast food wrappers, and discarded socks, shoes, and underwear. Crumpled pages ripped off a yellow-lined pad were scattered across the floor. A rumpled pillow and balled-up quilt were pushed to one end of the couch. Morelli smiled when he saw me, and I got warm inside and smiled back. He was still in work clothes, dark jeans and boots, cream-colored sweater with the sleeves pushed to his elbows, gun on his hip. He had a garbage bag in one hand and a can of air freshener in the other. I thought your mother was coming over to clean, I said to him.
She was here this morning. This is afternoon trash.
What's with all the crumpled pieces of lined paper?
Anthony decided he should write a book about his life.
Because why? I asked Morelli.
He thinks his life is fascinating. He's calling his book, Love Your Inner Jerk.
What does that mean?
I don't know, Morelli said, but it can't be good.
I helped gather beer cans and food wrappers and stuff them into the garbage bag. I left the underwear for Morelli. I wouldn't touch the underwear with a big stick. Doesn't Anthony have a job? I asked him.
Not this week. He took the week off to get his act together.
Looks to me like he's spreading his act all over your house.
This is nothing. You should see what I've got upstairs.
The naked woman?
Yeah, she won't leave. She says she's waiting for Anthony to come back with pizza.
So when he comes back, she'll leave, right?
He's been gone for almost 2 hours. For all I know, he could be gone for 2 days. It's happened.
Did you try telling her to leave?
Yeah, she told me to take a hike.
You're a cop. You probably drag naked women out of bedrooms all the time.
Almost never. And this is my bedroom, and this woman was brought here by my married brother. I'm supposed to be keeping him in line. If this gets back to my sister-in-law and my mother, I'm in big trouble. And even worse, if I lay a hand on this bimbo, she could scream rape or police brutality or God knows what.
So you want me to get rid of her for you?
Yeah.
Morelli grinned at me again.
If you did that one thing for me, I'd be nice to you. Really nice.
And then what? Would I have to be really nice to you?
Nah, you could walk away. Adios, sayonara, good night.
I'd heard this before. Once Morelli got rolling, no one walked away. No one ever wanted to walk away. Morelli naked was a force of nature. Of course, I could have him keep his clothes on, but that might feel weird. What about your brother?
I'll lock the doors.
Hasn't he got a key? Morelli dropped the garbage bag on the floor and stuffed his hands onto his hips.
Are you going to do this for me or what?
Sure. Do you know her name?
All I know is she's naked and mean as a snake.
I climbed the stairs, knocked on Morelli's closed bedroom door, and pushed it open. There was a naked woman in his bed, all right, and she was mad.
She was sitting up with her arms crossed over her huge breasts and her eyes narrowed. She had a lot of overprocessed blonde hair in a teased-up rat's nest. She was early 40s with tanning bed skin one step away from a carcinoma epidemic. Her lips had been inflated by someone not especially good at it, and she had a spider tattooed on her arm.
"Now what?" she said.
"You're in my boyfriend's bed."
"He said he wasn't attached. Are you some crazy bitch jilted girlfriend?"
"Nope, I'm the current girlfriend. This house belongs to Joe Morelli, and you're waiting for his worthless married brother Anthony."
"Are you kidding me? Anthony told me this was his house."
"Anthony's house is about a quarter mile away, and his wife is living in it."
"How do I know you're telling me the truth? And what's Anthony doing here anyway? He had a key and everything."
"His wife kicked him out, and he's stuck here until she decides to take him back."
"So he sort of isn't attached," she said.
"He's married, and he has 5 kids.
"Yeah, but she kicked him out."
I had the feeling this was going nowhere. Time to improvise. "Truth is, his wife would be better off if you took him off her hands," I told her. "He comes home drunk all the time and beats her and the kids with a gravy ladle."
"Jeez," she said. "That's awful."
"And he can't keep a job, so his wife has to work nights at the button factory," I said.
"I didn't know they made buttons at night."
"She cleans up, washes floors and toilets and stuff."
"Ick, that's even worse than my job."
"What do you do?"
"I work for a construction company. They're all a bunch of assholes."
"You didn't give him any money, did you?"
"I gave him money for the pizza and more beer," she said.
"Bad move. He probably bought a hooker with the money."
"I don't know. He didn't look all that lively when I was done with him."
"Yeah, but he's a sex addict. Got a bunch of diseases. He wore a condom, right? I mean, you didn't touch him or anything, did you?" That got her out of bed, hunting for her clothes.
"I do not need any more diseases," she said.
She yanked black stretch pants over her ass and tugged a sweater over her head.
"That prick had a lot of nerve misrepresenting himself. The more I'm thinking about it, the more steamed I'm getting."
She rammed her feet into 4-inch stilettos and grabbed her purse off the dresser.
"He hasn't heard the last of it from me either."
She stormed out of the bedroom, stomped down the stairs, swept past Morelli and out the front door.
"I'm impressed," Morelli said to me. "How did you do it?"
"We just had a heart-to-heart. You know, girl talk."
"Do I get to be nice to you now?"
"No, now you put on a pair of rubber gloves and take all the sheets off your bed and throw them away." Morelli went upstairs with a new garbage bag, and I continued to pick up the downstairs. "Where's Bob?" I called up to Morelli.
"He's tied out back. I had him at work with me, and I didn't want him snarfing around in the living room until I cleaned up."
Bob is Morelli's dog. He's mostly golden retriever with a touch of Sasquatch. He's big and goofy, entirely lovable, and he eats everything. Chairs, table legs, whole hams stolen from the table. I let Bob in, and Bob rushed through the house, excited to be home, jumping around me like a rabbit. I filled his bowl with fresh water and another bowl with dog crunchies, and Bob dug in. I tied off my garbage bag and set it by the back door. I was about to go upstairs to help Morelli when Anthony walked in.
"Hey, beautiful," Anthony said to me. "Haven't seen you in too long."
Anthony, for all his faults, can be charming and hideously likable. He was carrying a large pizza box and had his fingers hooked around a 6-pack of Bud.
"Charlene," he yelled up the stairs. "Come get your pizza."
"Geez," I said, "bad news. Charlene took off."
"No big deal," Anthony said, not missing a beat. "More pizza for us, right? Where's Joe?"
"Upstairs." The front door banged open. Charlene stormed in and pointed a nail gun at Anthony. Anthony partially turned to look at her, and she shot him in the ass. Bang, bang, bang.
"That's for the gravy ladle," she said. "You should be ashamed of yourself."
And she left, slamming the door shut behind her. Anthony and I were momentarily stunned, mouths open, bug-eyed.
"Fuck,"
Anthony finally said. He dropped the pizza, and Bob galloped in and ate it. Morelli appeared at the head of the stairs.
"Were those gunshots?"
"Charlene came back and shot Anthony in the ass with a nail gun. She works for a construction company."
"Where is she now?"
Morelli asked. "Gone." Morelli jogged down the stairs and looked at Anthony's backside. Blood was seeping through his jeans.
Shit, Morelli said. Why'd she shoot you?
I don't know, Anthony said. Something about a gravy ladle.
I ran to the kitchen and got a couple towels. By the time I got back to the living room, Morelli was dragging Anthony out the door to the car. Morelli owns an SUV, so Bob has a safe, comfy place to ride, but he keeps a Ducati in his garage for times when he needs to take his wild side for a drive. We loaded Anthony into the back of Morelli's SUV, and Morelli drove the short distance to St. Francis Hospital. The pain was setting in when we offloaded Anthony. He was white-faced and sweating, and he was swearing in two languages. Morelli dragged him into the emergency entrance, and I parked the car in the parking garage. Okay, so I felt a little bad. But how was I to know Charlene would shoot Anthony over the gravy ladle? I mean, who would even believe it? A gravy ladle, for crying out loud. I had no idea where gravy ladle had come from. Baseball bat and tennis racket had horrified me, and then gravy ladle popped into my head. Maybe I was hungry. Morelli was slouched in a chair in the waiting room when I walked in. I took the seat beside him and sat with my bag hugged to my chest. Will he be okay? I asked Morelli.
That's a complicated question. There's a lot more wrong with him than a nail in the ass.
An hour later, Anthony got wheeled out, face down, on a gurney, ready to go home. He was wearing baggy hospital pajamas, and one side of his butt had a big bulge where he was bandaged.
He's full of local anesthesia and happy juice, the nurse told Morelli, so he should be okay for the ride home. And he's got a prescription for painkiller and antibiotic, and he's got directions for changing the dressing once a day. Bring him back in 10 days to get the sutures removed.
She handed Morelli a little bag.
Here's his nails, in case he wants to frame them.
I ran for the SUV and hustled it around to the emergency entrance. Morelli and a male nurse loaded Anthony into the back, and I drove us to Morelli's house. Morelli dragged Anthony into the house and got him face down on the couch.
Women, Anthony said. Can't live with him. Can't live without him.
Bob sniffed Anthony and ran away. I was in pretty much the same frame of mind as Bob.
Gotta go, I said. Things to do.
Morelli walked me to my Jeep. He wrapped his arms around me and kissed me with a lot of tongue and desperation.
You're leaving a sinking ship, he said.
Think of this as a bonding time, and keep him tranked.
Chapter 11. Diesel was at the dining room table working on my computer when I walked in.
What's the word on the naked woman? He asked.
I managed to get her out of Morelli's bed, but she came back and shot his brother in the ass with a nail gun.
Diesel pushed back in his chair and smiled wide.
I'd ask for details, but they might be disappointing compared to what I'm thinking.
It was a fiasco.
I got a beer out of the fridge and chugged half of it.
What are you doing?
Prowling around on the net, trying to learn something about electromagnetic fields. Munch's doctoral thesis was specific to atmospheric ionization, a subject about which I know zip.
I couldn't see Carl, but I could hear Super Mario Brothers coming from the couch. Has he been playing that all night? I asked Diesel. Diesel stood and stretched.
Yep.
And you're okay with it?
Yep.
Boy, I'm impressed. That's so mellow.
Actually, I'm only hanging on until the battery runs down. I figure he's got about 2 minutes left. And he doesn't know how to recharge the thing.
And at that moment, there was silence in the room.
Eep,
Carl said. He stood and looked over the back of the couch at us. He held the game player up for us to see.
Eep!
It's dead, Diesel said.
Carl's eyes went wide, and his mouth dropped open. He shook the game player and examined it.
Geez, I said to Diesel, that's tough. Easy for you to say. You spent the night with a naked woman, and I spent it with this monkey.
Carl threw the game at Diesel and tagged him in the back of the head.
This is getting old, Diesel said, picking the game up off the floor. I'm not as nice as I look. If I hear one more eep, I'm gonna open a can of whoop-ass on the monkey.
You're frustrated because you can't get to Wolf.
That's part of it.
His phone rang, and he answered and listened.
Be right there, he said, and disconnected.
Flash? I asked.
Yeah. Wolf returned to the Sky Social Club. He's inside. Let's roll.
What about Carl?
What about him?
I don't want to just leave him here in this mood.
Diesel pulled a charger out of his pack and plugged it into the game.
I'm recharging this, he said to Carl. I'm gonna plug it in, and when the red light turns green, it's good to go. Do you understand?
Carl shrugged. Diesel grabbed my hand and pulled me to the door.
We need to move.
Flash was parked halfway down the alley. We slid to a stop behind him, cut our lights, and we all got out and stood looking in the direction of the Sky building.
He's still in there, Flash said. His car is parked behind the building and it hasn't moved.
Do you have any idea who's in there with him? Diesel asked.
I have my girlfriend watching the front, and from what we can tell, Doc Wiener is there with two lieutenants. Mostly the club runs during the day and empties out at night.
The back door to the club opened, and Wolf walked out. Too dark for me to see more than his outline. There was the sound of his car door opening and closing. The Ferrari engine turned over, and Wolf backed out and drove away from us. We all scrambled to get into our cars. Diesel wheeled around Flash, and just as he approached the Sky building, there was an explosion that blew out the building windows and doors and rocked the Escalade. I looked behind us and saw Flash put his car into reverse and tear down the alley. Diesel did the same. Flaming debris blocked the narrow road directly behind the club. It took me a couple minutes to catch my breath and get my heart to stop racing.
What was that?
I asked Diesel. My voice was an octave higher than normal, and my eyes felt like they'd been popped out of their sockets.
My guess is Wolf burned a bridge, Diesel said.
Diesel and Flash circled the block, but couldn't pick up the Ferrari. Diesel continued to drive south without success. The trail was cold.
I'm hungry, and I want beer, Diesel said. Where do I go?
Pino's will be open. It's just off Broad. 10 minutes later, we parked on the street several houses down from Pino's. It was a dark, starless, moonless night that had turned too cold for my sweatshirt. I power-walked the distance from the car to Pino's entrance and pushed into the heat and noise of the crowded bar. The place was filled with cops and nurses gone off shift, and my phone rang minutes after Diesel and I took a table and ordered food.
What's up? Morelli asked. I just got 4 calls telling me you're out with a guy who looks like he could kick my ass.
It's Diesel. Silence on Morelli's end. I figured he was counting his fingers and toes, trying to get a grip.
Diesel, he finally said. My life isn't bad enough. Now I have to worry about Diesel.
You don't have to worry.
Where's he sleeping?
Wherever he wants. Can we change the subject? How's Anthony's ass?
He's in your bed, right? Maybe I should just shoot him and be done with it,
Morelli said. I think he might be hard to kill. Anyway, you're supposed to trust me.
Ha!
Diesel said, and he chugged half a bottle of beer.
I trust you, Morelli said. I just don't trust him.
He'll be gone soon. Hang in there. More silence. This wasn't a good time for Morelli. Okay, here's the deal, I said. He's gay, but he's only halfway out of the closet.
What?
Yeah, I'm not his type.
He doesn't look gay, Morelli said.
How can someone look gay?
They're usually neat.
Well, he's a gay slob, what can I say? And on top of that, he can't get it up. Some sort of war injury. Blew his nuts off. Diesel had eyebrows raised.
I have to go, Morelli said. Anthony is moaning for pie. I have a Mrs. Smith's in the oven.
You're a good brother.
I'm an idiot.
Then he disconnected.
That sucks, Diesel said. I could have managed gay, but I really hate not having nuts.
It's a temporary thing. Next week you'll be in Spain or Malaysia, and you'll have your nuts back.
True. Call Ranger and see if he knows anything about the Sky explosion. He monitors a police band.
I punched Ranger's number, and he immediately came on the line.
Babe,
Ranger said. Sky Social Club had an issue tonight.
That's what I'm told.
It wasn't my fault.
It's never your fault, Ranger said. So far, no bodies found, but I don't think they've been able to get into the building yet.
I was watching the club when it blew. My man Munch is hanging out with a creepy guy named Wolf. Wolf left the club and blam!
You want to stay far away from Wolf, Ranger said.
You know him?
I know about him.
That's a relief. I thought maybe you were related.
Not nearly. Diesel and Wolf are Swiss.
Swiss? Diesel had been watching the television behind the bar, but that brought his attention back to me.
You know where I keep the key if you need a safe haven, Ranger said.
And he disconnected. I looked at Diesel.
You're Swiss? Origin of birth.
You seem so American.
I've spent a lot of time here.
I awoke alone in my bed. Diesel's side was rumpled, but Diesel was missing. Daylight half-heartedly peeped from the edge of my curtains, and I could smell coffee brewing. I dragged myself out of bed and into the kitchen. Diesel handed me a mug and filled it with coffee.
It lives, he said.
You're up early. What's the occasion?
It's not that early. It's almost 8 o'clock, and we need to be on the road. My sources tell me there's going to be a memorial service for Eugene Scanlon today. It's being held in a church in North Philly. I'm hoping his long-lost sister will show. Or his killer.
I hate memorial services.
Maybe they'll have donuts, Diesel said. You have 35 minutes to get memorial ready.
What about the monkey?
He's had breakfast, his game is charged, and the television remote is within reach.
The church was 2 blocks from Roberta Scanlon's house. It was gray stone with a standard bell tower and carved oak door. It was moderate size, and all parking was on the street. We arrived 10 minutes ahead of the service, and there were only a handful of cars at the curb. I was wearing my black suit with a short pencil skirt, 3-inch heels, and a white silk sweater. Diesel had selected for the occasion his jeans without a rip in the knee. Roberta was at the door when we entered.
Thank you for coming, Roberta said to Diesel and me. We'll have donuts after the service.
I felt Diesel smile behind me. Have you heard from your sister? I asked Roberta. Roberta motioned to the inside of the church.
Third pew from the altar on the left. She's the woman with the pink streaks in her hair.
We sat 3 rows behind Gail Scanlon, and her sister sat next to her for the short eulogy. I counted 13 other people present. All but 2 were women. All were Roberta's age. Eugene Scanlon was not in attendance. He was in Trenton, awaiting his autopsy. After the service, the Scanlon sister stood and filed out to the vestibule where the buffet had been set. They were both stoic. Roberta was in a shapeless black dress. Gail was wearing a bright rainbow-colored tunic top and flowing ankle-length skirt. Neither touched the food. Roberta spoke to the few mourners who approached her, and Gail quietly stood to the side. Gail looked at her watch and twisted the tunic hem in her fingers.
She's getting ready to bolt, Diesel said, pushing me forward. Talk to her.
I don't know her, and this is so private. What will I say?
Tell her the blouse she's wearing is pretty.
What?
Look at her, Diesel said. She's chosen to wear something colorful. I'm sure it was deliberate. But now she's feeling uncomfortable because she's made herself even more of a misfit. A compliment would go a long way here.
That's shockingly sensitive.
That's me, Diesel said. Mr. Sensitivity.
I crossed the room to Gail Scanlon.
That's a beautiful tunic, I said. Is it handmade?
Scanlon looked surprised, obviously astonished that someone would speak to her, much less compliment her clothes.
There's a woman in the Barrens who makes these, she said, smoothing a wrinkle away. I think they have positive energy.
Do you live in the Barrens?
Yes, usually. Sometimes I travel.
I haven't spent much time in the Barrens. People tell me they're interesting.
They're wonderful. My life work is in the Barrens.
What do you do?
I'm a soul guardian.
That caught me off guard. A soul guardian? I liked it, but I didn't know what it meant. It sounded a little wacko.
I protect endangered trees and animals, Gail said. Someone is to speak for those who have no voice.
Like a tree. She smiled.
Exactly.
And then it slipped out, the required statement I didn't really want to make.
Sorry about your brother. You're in the minority, Gail said.
Whoa, I hadn't seen that coming.
Excuse me? You probably are shocked, but you didn't know Eugene. He was a self-centered troublemaker all his life, even when I was a kid. I know I shouldn't speak bad of the dead, but that's how I feel.
She stuffed her arms into a heavy knit sweater she'd been carrying.
What I know is that Eugene caused his death. He did something bad one time too many, and it caught up with him. He was a real smart man, but he wasn't a nice man.
I should introduce myself, I said. And I handed her my card. Gail checked her watch.
Roberta said she spoke to you. Unfortunately, I have to get home. I have a lot of mouths to feed.
Where's home?
I've got a patch of land in the Barrens.
Do you know Martin Munch? I asked her. Do you know a man called Wolf?
No, she said. I have to go. I can't talk anymore.
One more thing, I said, but she waved me off and hurried away. Diesel moved next to me.
Well?
Nothing. She said she had to get home.
Diesel and I went to the door and watched Gail get into an old army surplus jeep and ease into traffic. Diesel grabbed my hand and pulled me to the Escalade.
Let's see where she goes.
He took the wheel and jumped from the curb.
She's going to be easy to follow in that jeep. She hasn't looked in her mirror once to see if she has a tail.
She's anxious to get home.
And home would be where? Diesel asked.
Down a dirt road.
Good to know. In case by some freak chance I lose her, all I have to do is look for a dirt road.
Hey, don't blame me. That's all she said.
Nothing else?
She said her brother was a miserable person, and had always been a miserable person, and that he probably deserved what he got.
Diesel shook his head. Man, that's severe. Imagine what she would have said if it wasn't his memorial service.
Gail hit the 95 and went south to the Tacony-Palmyra Bridge. We were a couple car lengths back, rolling at the speed limit. Gail wasn't a rule breaker on the highway. Diesel was in his zone, relaxed at the wheel. I was thinking about the donut I didn't get at the service, wishing I'd been quicker at the buffet. I was raised in the burg, where death is more a social opportunity than a tragic event. Viewings and wakes hold the potential for a decent food spread and free-flowing alcohol. It's one of the few occasions when throwing back whiskey at 10 in the morning is in good form. It's guaranteed that on occasion grief won't be easily set aside by a plateful of meatballs, but no reason to let that unhappy thought ruin a perfectly good time at the viewing for a distant acquaintance. Personally, I'd rather be at a mall. What do you think about death? I asked Diesel.
I like the buffet. After that, it's not my favorite thing.
He looked over at me.
What do you think about death?
I think carnations should be banned from funeral parlors. We rode in silence after that. I mean, what was left to say? Gail still showed no sign of noticing our behemoth black SUV close on her tail. She sailed over the bridge and took 73 south. Miles later, I was thinking I was on the road to nowhere. And then Gail slowed and hooked a left off 73. She wound around some, and after a while the road turned to dirt and narrowed. We dropped back as far as possible, although I doubt we could be seen through the dust cloud Gail was kicking up. There were scrubby bushes on either side, and the rutted road twisted around trees and chunks of rock. Diesel powered forward into a stand of scruffy pines, and bam! Something bounced off the front bumper, and we were blinded by a blizzard of feathers and blood. Oh my God, I said, my heart beating in my throat. What was that? Diesel stopped the car and looked at the windshield, which was plastered with what could only be bird guts.
That had to be the biggest bird on the planet, he said, unbuckling his seatbelt, getting out to take a look.
I stayed buckled. I didn't want to see any more than I was seeing. I was glad I didn't have a memorial service donut to spew. Diesel kicked at something on the ground and examined the front of the Escalade. He swiped a finger through the red stuff on the windshield and looked at it up close.
Fake blood, he said. I think we hit the Pine Barrens version of a booby-trapped piñata.
The feathers?
Real, but the bird who gave his all for them is long gone.
Why would someone booby-trap this road with a feather bomb?
I'm guessing Gail did it. Stops people from going forward. Makes a statement of sorts. Doesn't really hurt anyone. This is probably what war would look like if women were in charge.
Diesel got behind the wheel and flipped the windshield wipers on. The fake blood mixed with the washer fluid and feathers and gummed up the wiper blades.
What have you got in your bag? Diesel asked.
Tissues? He took the tissues, got out of the car, and tried cleaning the blades. No good. The tissues were now mixed with the blood and feathers and washer fluid. The whole windshield was a disgusting red smear.
I'm not happy, Diesel said.
I was still pawing through the junk in my bag, and I found a travel-size nail polish remover pad. This should do something, I said. I only have one, so don't waste it. I tore the foil envelope open and gave the saturated pad to Diesel. Diesel looked at the 2-inch square.
You're kidding.
Do you have anything better?
No. I'd stand on the hood and piss on the windshield, but I'm empty.
Some superhero. Diesel flipped me the bird and went to work with the polish remover. Moments later, he had a small piece of window exposed in front of the steering wheel. He cranked the car over, wheeled it around, and carefully picked his way down the dirt road, turning right when he reached the paved road. He followed signs to the Atlantic City Expressway and found a gas station just before the expressway entrance. I was pumping gas, and Diesel was scrubbing the windshield and grill, and the Ferrari sped by the gas station and took the expressway, heading west to the turnpike. "Too bad you can't fly," I said to Diesel.
"Yeah, rub it in. All through high school I took it for that."
"Do you want to go back to the dirt road?"
"No. I want to get on a computer and do some research first. We could ride around for days on that road and never find anything. And we're not even sure Gale means anything to us."
I washed down a sandwich with a soda and fed the last bite of bread to Rex. Better a late lunch than no lunch at all. Diesel was on my computer, looking at aerial views of the Barrens.
"This was taken several months ago," Diesel said. "But I see a clearing and a house and a fairly large outbuilding at the end of the road we were on. There are a lot of narrow roads intersecting and going off in all directions from that dirt road, but there's really only one house that can be reached by Jeep."
"Are you going back now?"
"No, I want to look at more aerial views, and I have a call into Scanlon's supervisor."
"That's okay by me. I'd like to take another stab at Gordo Bolo."
"As long as you don't go out of cell range. And you take the monkey."
"Why can't Carl stay here?"
"He's annoying. It's non-negotiable."
"Okay, fine. But you owe me."
"Looking forward to settling the score," Diesel said.
"Boy, you never give up, do you?"
"I wouldn't be me if I gave up."
I got Carl settled in the back of the Jeep, and I drove to the office.
"I'll go with you," Lula said. "But I'm not going inside. I'm not having no more rat experiences."
"What good are you if you won't go inside?"
"I can guard the Jeep. Suppose by dumb luck or something you snag Melonhead. You want to make sure the Jeep is still there when you come out, right?"
20 minutes later, I left Lula and Carl in the parking lot, put on my game face, and walked into Greenblatt Produce.
"If you're looking for Gordo, you're out of luck today," one of the women said. "He called in sick."
"That was fast," Lula said when I climbed behind the wheel.
I pulled Bolo's file out of my bag. "He called in sick." I thumbed through pages and found his home address. "He lives in Bordentown."
"I'm cool with that," Lula said. "Let's go to Bordentown and root him out."
The day had started out warm, but clouds had rolled in and the temperature was dropping. Not winter-quality dropping, but enough to notice when there were no windows in your car. I turned the heater on full blast and hunkered down.
"Where's your windows?" Lula wanted to know.
"They need to get zipped in."
"Well, zip 'em in. I'm freezing my ass off."
I'd bought the Jeep a month before when it was hot and I didn't need windows. I tried to zip them in once when it rained and had partial success. I was willing to try again. I pulled to the side of the road, and Lula and I grunted and tugged and cussed at the plastic windows. We finally got most of them secure, with the exception of the back window. The back window would only zip halfway.
"Good enough," Lula said. "We need ventilation anyway since a monkey's back there."
Carl gave her the finger.
"That all you got?" Lula asked Carl.
Carl grabbed his crotch and hiked it up.
"That's disgusting on a monkey," Lula said. "You been letting him watch MTV? You want to monitor his television viewing."
I checked Carl out in my rearview mirror. He was back to playing with his game. "Get the map out and find 656 Ward Street in Bordentown," I told Lula. Lula opened the map and traced a line with her finger.
"You gotta get off Route 206 in about half a mile."
10 minutes later, we were on Ward Street, but we couldn't find Bolo's house. There was no 656 on Ward Street. The only thing on Ward Street was a cemetery on one side and a ceramic pipe factory on the other. I called Bolo's home phone. No answer. No machine picked up. I called his cell phone.
"Yeah?"
Bolo said. "This is UPS. I have a delivery for Gordo Bolo, and I need a correct address."
"Eat me,"
Bolo said, and he hung up. "I think he knew it was me," I said to Lula.
"Should have let the monkey make the call."
I called Connie. "I got a bogus home address for Gordo Bolo."
"I'll get back to you,"
Connie said.
"You know what?" Lula said. "We're halfway to Atlantic City. We could go to Atlantic City and make a killing on the slots."
"Tempting, but I told Diesel I'd be available."
"Available for what?"
"For bounty hunter stuff." My phone rang, and I heard labored breathing and a whispered hello.
"Yes," I said. "Is this the bounty hunter?"
"Yes."
"Thank God. I had your card in my pocket, and I didn't know who to call. They think I'm still unconscious. I couldn't call the police. I'm afraid they take my animals. But you find people, right?
Gail?
You have to help me, please. They're taking me somewhere.
It was clear she was struggling to talk, trying not to cry, but a sob escaped before she reined herself in.
I'm in terrible trouble, she whispered. You have to find me and take care of my poor animals. Oh, God,
she moaned.
It's Wolf. He's coming back. He's coming to get me.
And the line went dead.
You don't look good, Lula said to me. You just turned white. What was that call about?
It was Gail Scanlon. It sounded like Wolf kidnapped her.
I dialed Diesel's cell. No answer. I left a message to call me, and I called my home phone. No answer there, either. I put the Jeep in gear and called Ranger.
Do you have my Jeep bugged?
Bugged?
You know, the gizmo you always put on my car so you can find me?
Yeah.
Can you find me anywhere?
Pretty much. Where are you going?
I'm heading for the Pine Barrens to check out a woman in trouble, and I'm afraid I'll get lost.
Babe,
Ranger said. There isn't cell service in some spots, so if you don't hear back from me for a couple days, you should come get me.
I'll make a memo on my calendar.
I hung up, and Lula was shaking her head.
I swear, if I was going to ask a favor of a ranger, it wouldn't be to come rescue my ass. And I don't believe he's got a tracking device on your junk of a car. What's that about?
He has them on all his fleet vehicles, and he puts one on mine because I sometimes work for him. And because he cares for me. A lot. The caring was mutual, but Ranger, like Diesel, was out of my relationship comfort zone.
So now what? Are we going to go after Gail Scanlon? Lula wanted to know.
Yeah, I have a pretty good idea where she lives. We'll start there.
Lula had the map in front of her again.
You got an address?
Yep.
It's Follow the Dirt Road.
I took Route 206 to Marbury Road and turned left. Route 206 was a slower road than the turnpike, but more direct. Carl was happy in the back seat with a bucket of fried chicken parts. Lula had a bag of burgers and fries. I had a vanilla milkshake. I left Marbury Road, and my confidence level dropped. I was going as much on instinct as memory, relieved when something looked familiar. I reached the dirt road and slowed. I didn't want to create a dust cloud announcing my approach. Lula peered through the Jeep's small windshield.
Are you sure we're in Jersey? This don't look like Jersey to me. This don't even look like America.
How much of America have you seen? I asked her.
In person or on television?
I crept around a stand of pines and saw the massacred faux bird bomb on the ground in front of me. Hooray! I was on the right path. This is as far as I got with Diesel, I said to Lula. We lost Gail Scanlon here.
You know how to get out of this hellhole, right?
Piece of cake.
I don't like all these trees and no strip malls. It don't seem normal.
I followed the dirt road for a half mile and came to a fork. Both sides of the fork looked exactly the same. I got out of the car and examined the dirt like I was Tonto running point for the Lone Ranger.
Well?
Lula asked. I got back in the Jeep. I hadn't a clue. Left, I said.
Boy, you're good, Lula said. I didn't see nothing in that dirt.
Carl was on his feet in the back seat, peering over my shoulder, looking worried.
What do you think? I asked Carl. Left?
Eep,
Carl said. I took the left fork, and after a while I came to another fork in the road, and then another.
All I can see is trees and sand, Lula said. It's like the end of the world. There's no sidewalks. Where's the cement? And I haven't got no bars on my cell phone. What's with that? I don't like being without bars.
I looked at my phone. She was right. No bars. I hoped Diesel wasn't trying to reach me.
Maybe we should turn around, Lula said. I'm freaking. These trees are closing in on me. I need bars on my phone.
The road's too narrow to make a U-turn. I'll turn as soon as it widens.
What if it don't widen?
It'll widen.
Truth is, I had no confidence it would widen, and I had no idea where I was. I was lost beyond being lost. My plan was to go forward and keep turning left, and eventually I thought it had to take me somewhere.
I gotta go to the bathroom, Lula said. I shouldn't have had that supersized soda. You need to find a gas station or McDonald's or something.
An hour later, I was still creeping along in the barrens, no golden arches in sight.
I'm gonna burst, Lula said. I gotta go.
I came to a stop. Pick a tree, I said.
What?
This is as good as it's gonna get. We're lost, and we're out of gas.
I don't want to hear that, Luva said. It's going to get dark. I don't like the idea of being here in the dark. It's creepy, and the Jersey